Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
What's up, guys? In this episode, we're going to be talking a little bit about philosophy. Now, we're not philosophers. Sometimes we get our terms and ideas mixed up, but you know what? Just deal with it. I'm Derek.
And I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of...
Welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit, your weekly dose of, I don't know, literature, pop culture, film, whatever else you want to hear.
Dissecting the bullshit, as we used to
say. Yeah, what did I say? Deconstructing the bullshit.
And now all we do is bullshit.
Do
you know what I mean? Oh, God.
Hi, guys. I hope you guys are having a good week. Thank you for joining us again.
Unfortunately, Ray's not here. She's out in New Orleans.
Yeah, living her best life.
Looking for her Kofi Cerebo.
A Kofi Cerebro.
What's the festival called? Essence.
It's Essence Festival. Yeah, man. So she's enjoying that.
She's
so
really good to Essence Fest. I can't believe it.
Like, I've seen pictures of her. Like, she's got seen panels with, who is it? Like Queen Latifah. All those guys.
And she said Issa Rae just walking down the
street. Issa Rae just walking down the street, man. This is her life. And she's just living the dream.
I wonder what kind of... Obviously, it had an impact, Girls Trip, on the Essence Fest numbers. It must have. Mm. But I would love to know how many more people now go to Essence Fest after watching the film. Girls Trip.
Yeah. I always have an issue with, like, you know, when films cross over into real life like that.
Why?
Because I feel like it's so close to real life that people start to not distinguish what's real and what's not. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they could have done it. For me, like, Girls Trip could have been like a festival they had gone to. Mm. It didn't have to be Essence Fest, though. But now, because I'm questioning, how did they even film it? Because if it was during Essence Fest, how is that? Unless they didn't film it during Essence Fest, but I don't know.
They probably did do it.
That's a huge budget if they didn't, because then they would need everything to look like it was Essence Fest.
Yeah,
right?
I think they probably did film it during Essence Fest, maybe.
I don't know. So I find that was just... I found it a bit weird.
I love all that. I really want to see? I want to see a movie about Carnival, fam. About some people like, oh, we're travelling to London for the Notting Hill Carnival.
Soon come, man.
I think that would be so funny. Are there any... There must be some movies about Carnival.
Nah, not that I know of. There aren't any...
Really? Or novel about Carnival?
Actually, you know what? I don't know. I have to look into that. Do you know what came to my mind when you said that with Baby Father? And it wasn't even Carnival. It was just them trying to be like...
Oh, in one of the episodes?
Yeah, that baby might... There, yeah. Was it Baby Father? Yeah.
Must be Baby Father,
they're trying to... Or was it the film that I was watching? Was it...
There's a film as well?
No, it was Dancehall Queen I was thinking of.
Oh, Dancehall Queen.
Yeah. No, it's Dancehall Queen. Then my boy laughed me garment. Yeah, man.
But anyways.
I mean, she saw Asante from the Friend Zone, so that was great as well. That's always fun. Always fun.
Shout out to Friend Zone. But how's your week been anyway?
My week's been good. I've taken up swimming again. I've gone back swimming. I wrote a piece about coping mechanisms and mental health awareness week. And fitness is a huge part of mine.
Self-care.
And I just realized that cardio, like swimming, is the best form of cardio for me. Because you know, like when you're pounding the streets running, and you know, when you see people, like they look so distressed after running, and like, you know, they look all twist up after like a hit. session or something.
You know, it feels good though. It feels good,
but like when you're doing a HIIT swimming session, yeah, I feel like obviously because you sweat, but you sweat differently, actually, I think, in the pool as well. But you'd have no distractions. You literally have no music. You can't put music in. You can't put a podcast in. You can't be distracted from your breathing or whatnot.
There must be...
There might be, but
waterproof headphones.
Yeah, I think there might be, but I feel like
That would be nuts. I want to get them and actually go swimming just to listen to music underwater. Sick.
But, oh, yeah, that might be actually crazy. Actually.
Yeah, that must be a vibe.
But you know when you're trying to, like, proper tune out and it's just water, like, just, like, in your ears, and that's all you have to focus on, like focusing on your stroke and focusing on your breathing and whatnot. I mean, that's amazing. So yeah, I took that back up again, 2 to 3 times a week. I'm just really trying to take some time for myself because I'm so busy all the time. Like, I'm constantly giving myself to other things and other people, and I figured if I could just take an hour just to be in a pool,
yeah,
it'd be amazing. But that sums up my week.
That's a good look, man.
What about your house? Was yours like?
My week has been all right. Like, what did I do this week? Like, work. Read a bit. Wrote. I had a nice little article published on Media Diversified, which was.
It's a really good article.
Interest, thank you. And got an interesting response. I think people think I'm making up, like, that that black men are insecure sometimes. I mean, we're human beings, like, not every black male is this fake alpha male, like, you know, nothing phases me, like, I don't care if I'm
100% just, confident in everything that I do and everything that I am.
It's absolutely rubbish, isn't it? I mean, but anyway, I mean, I just wanted to kind of get the conversation going.
Yeah.
I wasn't making any kind of grand sweeping statements or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, saying emotional expression is important for developing relationships and mental health, mental well-being. I don't feel like that's an outlandish statement at all. But yeah, that's what I was getting at. That is it, really.
Yeah. We have to shout out the fact that we're on the Rising Stars, like the bookseller, Rising Stars 2018.
Yes, thank you to the bookseller.
We're in good company.
Yeah, for nominating us as Rising Stars.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. It was amazing to see that the responses on Friday when it came out.
I was literally hiding in my office. Like, my manager sits opposite me, and she was like, "Oh, congratulations on the Rising." I was like, "Shh, don't." I was like, "Shh, I don't want anybody to know in the office."
I'm so glad because I remember when I was in the office when something else came out in the bookseller, and then people like kept looking at me, and it was just it was awkward, man. I'm so glad I wasn't in. But yeah, man, it was it's an honour, man. Thank you so much. Thank you so much to the bookseller. It's been amazing.
Anyway, right. What are you reading anyway?
This week, I am reading... What am I thinking? Oh, I'm rereading Goodbye Things. Actually, I'm continuing to read Goodbye Things by... What's his name? Fumiso Susaki.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about just the way I kind of harbour materials and just all of that, like... You know, in my room, there are, like, so many books and so many things, so many, like, unused clothes and unused bags and boxes and
all these different things. Hold on a minute. When I dashed out all my stuff and I dashed out my bed and all my clothes and stuff, you and Ray called me nuts.
But you are nuts because why are you throwing your bed out?
Because why do I need... I didn't need a big bed frame.
You're sleeping on it. Okay.
I was just sleeping on a nice little... On a mattress thing on the floor.
That's no way to live, Derek.
Whatever.
You actually need to have an actual bed.
Well, why do I need a bed frame?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't have a bed. I've got a small Japanese one that's kind of like, you know, those really low beds?
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't see it.
Yeah.
You don't see it. Like, so that's kind of, I made that decision to buy those very minimal things.
Yeah.
But because I've got so many other things that I haven't actually cleared out yet.
Yeah, I wasn't sleeping on the fucking floor, mate.
Yeah.
I wasn't sleeping on the floor. I mean, technically, so I was.
You need to specify.
I said I threw out my bed frame. I didn't say I threw out my bed.
So you just sleep on a mattress on the floor?
Sleeping on a mattress, a nice little.
No headboard. Wow.
No headboard, fam. Exactly.
I don't even have a headboard.
Well, yeah, okay, that's TMI. Interesting.
But, so trying to get rid of all of these different, not get rid of the books and stuff, but trying to figure out what to do next with them. Clothes, all these different things. When your room is cluttered, your mind is cluttered, it ruins your sleep, it does all these different things. So
it does.
I'm really reading it, trying to think about, like, there's different kinds of minimalists and different things that you can minimalize. I really want to minimalize my clothing because I really think that should just be kept simple.
Yeah. There's no need. Just get a uniform. I've got a uniform now. I've got my little blazer
your
there.
Blazer,
you know what I mean? With my Terence Higgins button thingy there. Like, that's me now. I'm
Pastor
good.
Pastor Derek, I think that's what I'm going to call you.
I'm good now. That's my Pastor. Uniform.
But man, so that's what I'm reading. Really good book.
Awesome.
What about you?
I'm reading Hold by Michael Donkor. And it's fucking good, man. I really like it. Obviously, I'm going to be doing a panel with him and Diana Evans as well, on her book Ordinary People. But yeah, it's really, I mean, obviously I opened the first page and then there's a list of words translated from tree. I was like, you know, he's got me now. Like, I'm actually going to read. Do you know what I mean? I'm really going to enjoy this. I know it already.
You needed that.
I needed that. Yeah, exactly. And look at, I mean, I've got it. The cover is really beautiful.
Yeah.
So I don't know who this young lady is, but I really love her head wrap. But yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Really interesting. I don't know where it's going. Like, things are happening at the moment. I'm not going to give anything away. The book comes out next week, but I don't know where it's going. You know, I love the relationship between the two young house girls at the moment. You know, it's interesting, and it's the little girl's really funny. But yeah, so that's what I'm reading.
It's just reading. Hold.
Yeah. Hold, yeah, by Michael Donkor. Out next week.
So who's lit this week? Obviously, if you guys haven't been on social media, haven't seen what's been happening, what's been going on, like, Stormzy has announced that he's launching an imprint within Penguin Random House UK, Murky Books. So want to shout out to him, because put your money where your mouth is.
Fam, it's a big look.
Yeah, it's a big look, because at the end of the day, you know, like, so many people are at a position that Stormzy is in. And he's looked at it. I don't know what counselling or what advice he's been given, or who pitched it or whatever. But, you know, so many people have been like, have the position that he's in, and, you know, they're not and he's looked around and seen that there's a lack of something in certain industries. Yeah. I don't know whether that's the case, but this is what it looks like it to happen. See what I mean?
I think his conversation with Mallory Blackman on Twitter was probably the seed that started the conversation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Should we do a book with Stormzy, or how much further can we go?
Like, exactly. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, Jessica Parker's got an imprint in America.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, yeah, she's got an imprint as well. I think there's somebody else, someone does an article about it, about the rise of celebrity imprints or something like that.
Oh, right, okay.
But Stormzy's one, yeah. I mean, Penguin Random House, they're really
championing.
They're putting their money where their mouth is. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's any bigger way to put your money where your mouth is than to give a black man an imprint, when there's hardly any black man in publishing.
For real. So that's a good look. So that's Murky Books. I guess they're taking submissions, so I think people should go out and start looking.
I believe they're looking for an intern as well for 2019.
Yeah, an intern. So, you know, you guys do your Googles, have a look, go find out what's going on there. I think that's really, that's dope. What about the submissions for Safe? How's that going?
Oh, yeah. So, Safe, my anthology, the anthology that I'm editing, there's going to be 21 writers in it. I believe the submissions are finished now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to be reading over all of the essays, and then we're going to pick a winner, and they'll be the 21st contributor to Safe on Black British Men Reclaiming Space.
Oh, okay.
Really exciting, actually. Do you know what it is? It's a group thing. Like, I remember when I was talking to my agent about it, I was like, I don't want my name on the cover. And she was just like, stop being stupid. I was like, I don't want my name. Do you know, I'm just really funny about though. Do you know what I mean?
Things. It looks like perception.
I was just like, I don't want my name on the cover. But she's just like, look.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
And it's a great project, man. Looking forward to like getting everything like tied up in there.
Yeah. Yeah. It should be good. We've got some amazing contributors. So
yeah.
All good.
Okay. So this week, I'm mostly lit, actually. Is there anything else I need to mention? Yeah, no. This week, I'm mostly lit. Do you want to go forth, my friend, and tell the people what I want?
Well, today we're going to be talking about an essay that we've mentioned before loads of times. Hopefully, a lot of our listeners have read it by now. It can be dense in places, but it's called Self-Reliance by Ralph Waldo Emerson, who was, you know, they say an eminent American scholar, philosopher, and he was like a champion of individualism. He had a philosophical outlook called transcendentalism. Really complicated. It doesn't quite make much sense to me. It seems to be like a mixture of Indian spiritualism and anyway, it's a mess, basically. I won't even lie. It sounds like a mess to me. Him and Thoreau, I believe he's called.
Okay.
the role. He wrote a book called Warden, where he's basically talking about, I think it's like a plot of land he had where he used to go and contemplate nature and things and so on and so forth. But
that
anyway,
sounds so peaceful.
Yeah, yeah, apparently. Pretty I haven't much. Read it, but apparently it's really interesting.
Yeah.
But yes, so that's what we're going to be talking about today.
All right, cool.
Self-Reliance by Ralph Waldo Emerson. So, Alex.
So, okay. First of all, what is self-reliance, right? I feel like from what I read.
No. What did you think of it, though?
What did I think of the book?
Yeah, what do you think of it?
I was saying this to Ray the other day, actually. Like, it's really pompous and it's really like... There's just the language. I feel like...
Well, yeah, because
yeah, obviously the time when it was written, yeah. Which is fine. And obviously, I was listening to it on audiobook, actually. And it was really like I was sitting down in front of a fire with this wise man telling me like how to like live my life in the most...
This dead white male.
Yeah, this dead white male in this most inconspicuous way. So I thought the book was good for all... the essay was good for all intents and purposes, right? But... I struggle to kind of like when faced with somebody telling me those things or writing about how to live independently and not for the gaze of others or you know you only really have yourself to do this. I feel like when somebody tells me that, it makes it a lot more difficult for me to kind of like proceed with those kind of actions, whereas when I kind of come to it myself and I think, oh, I'm going to go do this for myself anyway, I feel like it's easier for me to go about it because then at least I can have certain limitations on what I want. And I feel like he is quite extreme with a lot of the things.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yeah, I think it was a really good essay, though. Like, and it kind of came to me this week when I really needed it. I think that I really needed to think about...
Did it gas you up?
It didn't gas me up, but it kind of made me think... Little things made me think about, you know, I shouldn't be... like, the way that I'm perceived by others shouldn't matter. Or the things I do, you should be able to do it and not seek gratification, like not seek praise or think about how you kind of are received. Just do it.
Yeah.
If you think it's good, you do it, that kind of thing. And that's the kind of attitude that I was kind of like trying to work my way through up to this point. So I feel like I do think that certain aspects of literature come to you when you need it. Come to you, and this was really, really like telling this week.
I'm glad then.
I don't know about gassing me up because
what?
I don't know, man. I didn't feel like, oh wow, like I didn't feel like invigorated, and I didn't want to run out in the street. I think I'm gonna be like the most independent Negro. I was just like, okay, I see where you're coming with this. I see where this looks, but you know, he champions the lone wolf.
Yeah. Well, the lone wolf among other wolves. Like, the reason why I love this, and everybody knows I love this, it does gas me up, right? Yeah. And I feel like the way he talks about individualism, it's individualism that exists in a world of other people. It's not just, although he does say, you know, walk as if everything were titular and ephemeral except you.
I love that quote.
I love that quote as well, which is fair enough.
No, when faced, was it? No, I think there's more to that.
Yeah, there is more.
When faced with adversity,
like,
or something.
Yeah, or
when
or faced opposition, something like that.
When faced with opposition, then.
Yeah. And obviously that's just kind of like, take yourself most seriously.
Yeah.
And yes, absolutely do that. But yeah, I think it's powerful. I think there's some things in there that I don't 100% agree with, but the majority of things I do. I read it like once every couple of months.
Yeah.
Just to kind of get me back on track. Yeah, I love it. I love the way he writes as well. I always, when I read it, there's a voice that pops into my head that I cannot shake.
That's what I found, because I listened to it first time. It's only an hour long on audiobook. And then I read it physically online, and then I was like, "There was, you know, things jump out at you. Like there's a way with words. Sometimes they jump out at you just the way, and you kind of like condense quotes and stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, like he does write really well, like beautifully. And then listening to it again, it kind of helped the listening after reading it. So it's just thinking like I had to condense it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I you know, I got on with the book pretty well. You know.
So like, then what? So do you think that like complete self-reliance where you don't allow external factors to influence you, can that actually exist in a digital age, in a social media age, you know?
In the social media age, yeah. Like, so external factors, you don't want them to affect you. So, for example, then, if I'm on Twitter and somebody blocks me, does that affect my self-esteem? Is that basically, in a very simple terms?
Yeah, because what you're doing in that process, in that situation, you're thinking about how that other person, how the other person sees you. But obviously what Emerson says is that that should not matter. You should be
block me.
Onto yourself.
Don't give a damn anymore. At the end of the day, yeah, you get this, you're at this point where you're like, you've got, in a digital, in this digital age, in this digital world that we're in, like, especially when it becomes digital, it is, that's exactly what it is. It's a world in itself. Yeah, you're sitting there, and if to, like, your self-esteem is, and your worth and your value and stuff, kind of, it's kind of affected by how people perceive you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. On that, you know, how many followers you have, how many retweets, how many likes, all this different stuff that comes with being online and being digital. How many people engage with you? So when somebody receives that negatively, whether it be a block or an indirect or something, it is going to mess with a lot of people's confidence and a lot of people, the way that people perceive themselves, because nobody wants to feel like they're worthy of being blocked in everyday life. Some people don't care because it's online, but not everybody wants to. Nobody really wants to feel that way. Do you see what I mean?
I do see what you mean, but I think if we really just adopt what Emerson says, and, you know,
we shouldn't really yourself, be online anyway. Then
trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string.
Yeah.
If you really believe that you are you, you know, he always says that, like, speak now what is true, and speak tomorrow what is true. Like,
what is true today, it may not be true tomorrow. No, but it's true today.
Exactly.
Is that,
like,
what you're
it's
saying?
Just, you are the most important person. Other people shouldn't be able to affect how you see yourself. Other okay. people cannot get inside you and change who you are,
yeah.
unless you let them do so.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So being affected by a block, he's basically saying that you are giving people a way into you, when realistically they shouldn't even be able to.
Yeah.
Because realistically they can't.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. They shouldn't be able to affect you so much that, you know, you're there shaking and trembling, like, and this is the context of the digital age, right? You shouldn't be sitting there trembling at your keypad because somebody has said something that is largely untrue or, like, disrespectful to you, or has taken your opinion and twisted it or whatever. Because ultimately it says more about the other person and the other people than it does say about you and your intentions.
Even, we shouldn't even worry about what it says about them. Like, let them do their thing, fam.
Like, I mean, that's it. At the end of the day, right? I mean, intuitively, me, myself, I'm very much like, I do tend to care about what other, like, not about what other people think, but what they're going through in order for them to think that. Do you see what I mean? So I would look at it and think, rah, they blocked me, or they did, or they've done this to me, or they said this to me. What actually happened to lead up to that point for them to do that? What influences had happened in order for them to either misconstrue me or, you know, all these different things?
It doesn't matter, because they didn't have a conversation with you. Therefore, it shouldn't matter, because they clearly don't know what they're talking about.
There we go.
Do you know what I mean? But then I want to ask you then, individualism, as you mentioned at the beginning, good or bad?
It's a very European thing. Like, we had this conversation with, we were Africa Rights a few weeks ago. And, like, we had this conversation with Afua Hirsch, right? And it was the whole, she kind of triggered in my mind about, you know, individualism is very Western, a very European mindset, a very European cultural ideal, whereas collectivism, I think that's the opposite, or the community kind of based feel.
Communism, but not in the political sense.
Social communism, I guess. It takes a village to raise a child, all that stuff. Blah, blah, blah. You do things for your family. If you look at a black family in general, you're going to find a lot of them carry their family a lot of the time. I'm going at home because I need to get my sister. I need to sort out I need to provide for my parents. I need to help my parents. You know what I mean? All these different things. Whereas when I look at, say, I'm going to be straight with this, like, a Caucasian person, they don't, the ones that I've communicated with, a lot of them of the European background, they don't really care about that. They just go. They go and do that individualism.
But is
that,
is this a bad thing, bro?
This is what I'm saying. So I don't know. I don't know whether it's a bad thing or a good thing. I don't know what I'm. There's parts of me growing up in this culture that would consider my individualism good, but then I do place quite a bit of my value and my validity in family.
Yeah, but I mean, individualism, I don't think it's about like literally fuck my family, fuck my friends, blah, blah, blah. It's just,
I feel like it's just,
it's
like
about putting yourself first. Putting yourself first, one, trusting yourself more than other people, believing in yourself more than you believe what other people say, so on and so forth. So it could be a situation where, like, you may be in a relationship and you really believe in an individualism and believe in that each, you and your partner should pursue whatever it is each of you wants. Do you know what I mean? And it gets to a point where this person wants to do that, you want to do that. It will affect your relationship, but you still give each other the freedom to do that. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
That to me is like, okay, that's individualism. And then you can say to yourself whether it's a good or bad thing.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't know.
I don't know. So what do you think about individualism? Like,
man, I love that shit. I like it. I like it, yeah. Do you know why I like it? One, because I'm very introverted as well. So it allows me to rationalize my shyness.
Ah, see.
Do you get me? It allows me to be like, oh, that's why. So let me just be, which is cool, which is very, very nice, you know, to be intellectually dishonest. It's amazing. But
trash.
It's amazing.
I'm like, yeah, okay, go on.
But yeah, I really do like it. I like the idea. But then at the same time, I very caught up with like utilitarianism. I always say this. I'm really,
oh my God, about this brings me back to A-level.
Yeah, I'm really about the many and not the few in certain situations. Obviously, it ranges from thing to thing.
Many and not the few. So what is utilitarianism? Just so that if people don't know what utilitarianism
so
is,
it's basically, the way I see it.
Red me. Can't remember.
I think there's different strands. But okay. The way I see utilitarianism is that when you do something, what matters most is the effects, the size of the effects it has, how
useful is it?
Usefulness, yeah, that's the utility. But I mean, how many people it affects, how deeply it affects them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what's important. So sometimes with utilitarianism, the motivation behind what somebody does becomes irrelevant if it's affected like 100 people. Do you know what I mean? So it's that the famous question, the philosophical thing, do you kill one person to save 1,000?
Oh, that's like in The Good Place, isn't it?
Is that in The Good Place?
So basically, like, I think, what was the example? I think in The Good Place.
Oh, is that when on the train?
Yeah, when Chidi was like, he didn't know whether, he couldn't make the choice.
Yeah,
he couldn't make the choice.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah,
John
yeah.
says one was da-da-da-da, and he had to go over it and over it and over it again, because he couldn't.
There's bare philosophy in The Good Place,
there
you know?
There is, because I think, like, once you start messing, once you start having discussions about death and where you go after, I think that kind of lends itself to philosophy in itself. Like, these guys are positioned as dead. This is where they are.
Yeah.
What they have to look at what the theory of goodness is and evil and bad and all these different
and
things.
And what hell is. Which I really felt like a genius. This is probably so mundane.
You felt like a genius.
Because wow. At the end of... Man, it's been on for time.
It's been on for time. Go look for it. I don't care.
At the end of season one when they're all arguing and they're like, she's like, holy fuck, this is the bad place, yeah? And they're all arguing. That's literally like taken from Sartre's play called No Exit, where at the end he's like, hell is other people.
Yeah.
That's literally what it is. And I watched and I was like, oh, look, every time I recognize a bit of philosophy in The Good Place, I'll be like, oh, that's
you read
that,
too
that's
damn
Bentham.
Much. You
oh,
read
that's,
too damn
that's,
much.
That's Sartre. Like,
you're out here gassing yourself.
Get very excited. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, but it's true sometimes. You've got to think about like where, you got to think about where you are in relation to the philosophy of the day, because you know things are like all these different things, like about hell is other people and all of that stuff and making the choices to be good and all this stuff. I just think that, I mean, humans overdo it. I long for the day when we were just back in, like, I was my ancestors probably running around in some part of Africa minding their business.
Nigeria perhaps ancestors
in Nigeria. I don't even know, man.
But you know what you just said about...
I just long for those days of simple times, bro. Like,
but you know you said about the philosophy of the day? This also brings me back to like another thing Emerson said, where he was just kind of like, why do we have such reverence for the past?
Oh, yeah.
Why are we so obsessed with these ancient institutions? Like, and he even says that if you're going to explain something to me in the present by using the language of the past, you're doing yourself a disservice. You're doing me a disservice. I can't understand what you're saying. So I wonder then, should we be focusing more on modern takes on life and living and so on and so forth? And if that's true, does that mean that we should be reading up on like philosophy that critiques technology and social media? And because at the end of the day, we are children of the internet.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think that yes, we most definitely should be doing it, because when you start having these philosophy, like obviously the book of Western philosophy that, you know, that we've spoken about before on the show,
Bertrand Russell.
And you know, when we're taught RE in school and ethics and all these different things, and it's just the way that it kind of constructs our life, we are so consumed with the past. We've just spoken about utilitarianism. We've just spoken about all these different things. You know what I mean? Like, the context is changing. Everybody is a bit like, all right, we're at a point where, you know, we're shrouded as the narcissistic generation. We're shrouded as the very, you know, the social media led generation, very groupthink, echo chambery, buzzword D generation. I think that should kind of help with the way that we approach philosophy at this moment in time, just because like we can all relate to certain things. When you start to like keep focusing on, doesn't mean that you don't devalue the philosophy of the past. You just acknowledge it as the past. You see what I'm saying? Am I making any sense?
No, I get what you're saying.
Because I think like I mean, I have my opinions on social media, for example. And I'm sure that many people have their opinions on social media, and I'm sure that there is a new age philosopher. We have all these philosophy students come out here and write something and do something, man.
Listen, man,
you must be out here studying.
I was watching the news.
What are you doing?
I was watching the news, and on the news panel there was a meme expert.
See,
an expert of memes. You know what I mean?
Mimetic something.
But you know what? Like, yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and I think that we should be like really looking at the way that, not even in a psychological sense, like in a philosophical sense, where will the rise in social media take us, and the lack of privacy that we now have, the, you know, big data, all of these things, these collecting of our data, harvesting of information, the fact that now the fact that we can shame anyone we want and there'll be no consequences for it. Literally, where people can make things up on the internet and there'll be consequences for not the person who told the lie, for the person they lied about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Those kind of things. I think that's very important. And also the way that memes shape our thinking.
That's true.
Alex, memes really, I noticed this, memes change the way I think sometimes. Also, I've started thinking in 140 characters. So
what?
Let me explain. So sometimes when I'm thinking, I think in quick hot takes. Do you know what I mean? I'll think of like a pithy statement and that's my thought done. Like, okay, that's, do you know what I mean? In like some wildian way, like, oh, I'm going to try and sum up the world in an aphorism. Obviously, I can never do that.
Okay.
But yeah, I've noticed that. And I've had to kind of lengthen my thoughts out and give myself 280 characters. And then afterwards, really try to think properly.
Give myself 280
characters.
It's nuts,
man. And also, like, you see people who their facial expressions start to mimic memes that they've seen online.
I mean, people have been saying this about my facial expressions for the past 10 to 12 years.
Yeah.
I've been the original OG with the facial expressions, yeah? Don't get it twisted.
But yeah, it's true. But if you constantly see a meme GIF or something like GIF or GIF?
GIF.
I say GIF.
Graphics.
And I say meme. Some people say mem. Or meme.
Meme. It's a meme, man.
Some people say meme.
Anyone who says meme, you got issue. You need to actually, actually deal with that yourself. Whatever spiritual decline you're going down.
Stress. Quick bit of
trivia.
Do you know who invented the word meme?
Is it a white man?
Yeah, Richard Dawkins.
Richard Dawkins?
Yeah, I believe in the...
Richard Dawkins.
Was it the Blind Watchmaker?
Why? What?
Maybe it wasn't New Line Metro. I think it was The Selfish Gene. One of those two books.
Oh, okay.
I think he coined the phrase meme.
Oh, right.
Anyway, to be a trivia there.
But yeah, we do thinking. I don't see myself thinking in 140 characters. Only for the simple fact that I don't tweet 140 characters.
But do you never?
Anymore.
Are you never like during your day to day? You'll think of like a pithy statement and think, I should tweet that. And then you hold it in your mind and you're thinking, I've got to go tweet this.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
And
then you get on Twitter,
like, oh, satisfaction, I tweeted it.
There has been times, you know what I mean? Like, and I do think, you know when you receive it.
That's a sickness, boy.
That is a sickness, it's crazy. We are ill. Like, but you know when you receive certain tweets differently, like you receive them in a certain, but like, so recently, like, I've been very, you know, Monique, when she's like,
When you declinery
comes back to bite or noticing or something jumps out kind of thing. Like, a lot of people have been saying those things a lot. And I feel like, you know, once you start, people start like picking up the trends on like, you know, Monique culture. And I think that it's those things. When people start coming with the trendy, like little quips and pithy statements and then they start using it to, describe a moment, for example. There was an article that I saw on BBC with these rhino poachers. They wandered into lion territory and got eaten. And I quite tweeted it, and in my head I was like, oh my god, this is so funny. And I was like, oh my god, the carnivore jumped out.
Yeah.
Because I was like, in my head I was thinking like, that's actually jokes, because it sums up the whole story. You see what I mean?
It does.
Some type of context of the story.
But
because
that sounds like some 1984 shit where they're
kind of like,
let's condense all of this meaning into like...
into a sentence.
One word. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, was it plus good or good plus whatever? All that kind of rubbish. Okay, that's...
I think that's interesting though. Thinking in 140 characters.
Maybe it's just me, mate. Honestly, maybe it's just me.
I just think, like Drake said, everybody tweeted, like, you know, you're not the same offline. Everybody thinks they're one way. They're not the same offline at all. I've seen people tweet things, and they'll never say that with their chest offline.
Yeah, but I don't think that means that they're not that person.
They're not the same at all.
I don't think them being able to say online and not in person means that they're not that person. I think you should just give more credence to what they've said online, because I can't remember who said it. They're like, give a man a mask and he'll tell you exactly what he really thinks.
Yeah.
I think that's important. And also, like, on the other side of that, I remember watching Charlie Brooker on, I think it was on Channel 4 News, and he was playing video games with Jon Snow. And they were talking about Twitter. And Charlie Brooker just said offhand, oh yeah, Twitter's a video game. And Jon Snow was like, no, he's not. He's like, yes, it is. You pick a character and then you tweet exactly how you want to tweet.
Yeah.
How you think that character would tweet, sorry.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? That's actually true, you know. A lot of people pick a personality. It's like when a lot of people go to uni for the first time, they literally recreate themselves. Do you know what I mean? I did that. I recreated myself. I turned myself into a more confident type of person, I was very much into The Secret at the time. So I was very much like, if I want something, I can get it. I used to say to my girlfriend at the time, oh, I need a job. I'm going to get a job in a couple of weeks. She'd be like, Derek, it doesn't work that way. And I was like, we'll see. And I always got what I said I was going to get.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I always tried to
be that guy.
Exactly.
I had the afro. I had the unk. I tried that shit.
You had an unk? Why the fuck did you have an unk?
Because I was really trying.
He's on your whole tip.
I was on my.
When you do whole tip.
I was on my hood.
The whole tip
comes out. To this point, yeah, you like Maya were always like Maya were from Carry Them Go podcast. She basically always messages me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Like, shout out to Carrie Dunkle.
Yeah, she's always just like, oh, it's like, back when you were a Hotep, yeah? Like, someone like a rabbit tells me that you were a Hotep back in the day. I was never a Hotep. You know, one of them ones like, you're just standing on the fringes of Pan-Africanism. Mm. I didn't know what Pan-Africanism was to the point where I, at that time, in my second year of uni, I thought Pan-Africanism was anti-Caribbeanist.
Really?
Because I was a mess.
And man, imagine, like you. And imagine, isn't one of your national heroes Marcus Garvey?
There we go. Please, I don't. You know when you're
Alex,
you're 20, you have no sense and no knowledge. Mm. Me personally, I was basically like, I didn't know what I was supposed to know.
Right.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you just understand. And Twitter at those times, you know, there were certain people that were always talking about these things who have now gone off to do really, like, to go on and do rebranding and, like, mind their business. But at the same time, like, yeah, like, you do learn a lot, especially when you go to uni and trying to. I think I change myself every year. There was always something that I was doing new.
I'm the king of not rebranding, but like just literally just changing my mind. So now we can move on to actually what Ralph Waldo Emerson says about consistency.
Oh, God.
And how it's you know, the hobgoblin. What was it? Adored by little statesmen and small minds. And
I like that word, hobgoblin.
Hobgoblin. Yeah. All right.
I don't know. Wait, actually. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, like when the first time I read Self-Reliance, right? I'm going to tell you a little story now. Story time. First time I read Self-Reliance, it was in conjunction with reading Sartre's Existentialism is Humanism and Bell Hooks's The Will to Change. Now, these three books combined in my brain. So what I thought was, one, I have to be a lot more emotional, expressive. I can't hold my expressions in. Two, what I feel now, I should say now, and what I feel tomorrow, I should say tomorrow, even if they're different, even if they've changed. And two, three, I'm free to do what I like. Do you know what I mean? I make my own decisions and I must act on decisions. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. Those three things that I learned from those three books. I go into a relationship and it was an absolute mess, mate.
Scattered.
Because I was literally just saying whatever I felt. And I didn't, you know, my emotions were, I'm so impulsive. My emotions are so turbulent. So one day I'll be saying one thing so passionately, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Then the next day I'll wake up and it's the complete opposite. I'll be like, well, you know what? Emerson said that, you know, speak now and whatever, yeah. So the next I'll be saying, yeah, so.
It jumped out.
Exactly. Like, I was just doing a madness. So
the intellect jumped out.
But I do like what he said. I do believe that consistency a lot of the time makes us adhere to thoughts and beliefs that we don't believe anymore, but because we don't want to. Go on.
I was going
to
say, what kind of consistency? Like, is it behavioral consistency? Because in that, I agree.
Mm.
But
I think consistency of thought.
Okay, consistency of
and
thought.
And then obviously
because
the thought affects your behavior,
because obviously,
of course.
I don't know, when I think of consistency, I think of work, for example. Like, if you're consistent, for example, we say we are writers. Are you consistently writing in order for you to be one?
Yeah.
Musicians, are you consistently writing and producing music for you to be a musician? Are you determined and disciplined to do that? In that kind of consistency, I kind of feel like, yeah, that's what's
it's
needed, because you need to build that as
and
your
that's
work.
Because you're aiming for a particular goal.
Exactly.
I think what Emerson's saying is consistency in that, you know, scientists, well, I'm not scientists, but people who are, scientists, a lot of scientists say that, you know, with the, once you acquire new information, you're allowed to change your mind. That's what you're supposed to do. You know, a scientific theory is they're constantly trying to disprove things. Do you know what I mean? Which means that what you believe today, tomorrow you may not believe because it's been disproved. You know, with new information, you can change your mind, and that happens a lot. And honestly, especially in the social media age, if you're constantly on Twitter being bombarded with tweets or Facebook statuses or, you know, threads and all that kind of stuff, you're constantly exposed to new information. So to expect anybody who lives on social media, who lives in the internet age, to be consistent is, honestly, in my opinion, a little bit harsh, you know, because, you know, your mind's going to keep on changing. And I don't think that just because you want to seem consistent or seem fixed in your beliefs, you know, they say if you don't stand for something, you fall for anything. I think that's rubbish, to be honest. I don't think you should force yourself to, you know, adhere to something even if you don't actually believe it anymore. I think that's silly. You're allowed to change your mind, even if it's in the next 5 minutes. I'm saying this to you, Alex. I might sit down now for 5 minutes and be like, Alex, you know what? Yeah, nah, I don't believe. I think I've actually done this on the podcast before.
You actually have.
Did you know what I mean?
You really haven't.
I said something and then I thought about it and I'm like, nah, actually, I've changed my mind. Fair enough, mate.
The thing is, well, I admire that though, because you can actually sit there and say that you've changed your mind and that point, and you know that your mind has changed.
Mm-hmm.
With me though, I feel like I gradually move. Like, I'll have an opinion. The thing is, I don't necessarily have the opinion straight away because I won't know what I think. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I'm working on. I'm doing the work. Guys, it's tough. It's stressed out here.
Yeah.
But when you're like, you have the opinion, you're trying to figure out what that means to you and how, because I feel like what did me a disservice in early stages was that I always wanted to remain consistent with the thought that I had.
Mm.
And because that couldn't be, and because certain thoughts and certain actions can't be applied to everything, unless you 100% believe it, then, like, I went through a stage at uni where I was trying to go through radical honesty.
Okay. Does that just mean speaking a hard truth without any tact?
Essentially. Okay. It basically means It basically means just like, it's the, you say the truth as it comes, because there's no misunderstanding, there's no miscommunication, everything's out there in the open as it stands, right? So, but then I started to find myself thinking, oh, should I be radically honest here? Or should I be radically honest there? Like, do I have to be it all the time? Do you know what I mean? So there's no way if I was to be consistent in that, I probably would have not had many friends after that. Like, do you know what I mean? Because there are some things you don't say, and there's some things you say differently, and there's some things you say in different ways.
Fair.
And that was kind of like what that taught me in itself. But nobody does that. And I'm not sure there's many people that actually ascribe to radical honesty anymore.
No,
there's
a book out there,
I'm sure.
We can't, not in this day and age anyway. Speaking of rudeness, I wanted to talk about Jamaicans. basically, like, there's a...
you're actually rude. Had me choking.
I feel like, Ralph Waldo Emerson and Jamaicans have in common this idea. So basically,
you're very rude.
No, honestly, Emerson says, like, watch that gleam of light which flashes across your mind from within. He describes it as like intuition.
Yeah,
trusting what you know, that flash.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Jamaicans have a saying where it's like, my spirit don't take or something. And that's intuition, isn't it?
Yeah,
I feel like that's
the
same kind of, because even Emerson says, you know, when a young person watches people go by and then he sums them up in a phrase, this person's boring, this person's that, this person's that.
That is a lifestyle.
This is it. And I feel that's what Jamaicans and Emerson have in common. Now,
I like that connection. I wanted to ask,
like, do you believe that? Do you believe that some people, you just instantly know? Nah.
Do you know, my friend actually always drags me. Because he says I don't listen. At certain points, I didn't listen to my intuition, like, at all. I've listened to it a lot more lately than I have in previous times. But I felt like, if your spirit doesn't take to somebody, there's no point you continuing that. I mean, I've been burned from this, as you know.
Mm.
You just continue
But is it continuous? When your spirit doesn't take to someone, is it an instant feeling that fades away that you must remember, or is it consistently there?
It's consistently there. Mm. That you see, that you've, like, there'll be points where if you push it aside and you say to yourself, like, listen, all right, I'm going to push that aside, whatever, I'm going to try it with these people, this person, whatever. And then if it continuously crops up,
mm.
and I feel like when the universe tells you certain things, you have to listen to how... to the lessons that it's giving you. And if you're not learning it from that point, you're going to learn it from this point. If you don't learn it from this point, it just deepens your hurt as you go. And, you know, I do like the connection with the Jamaican saying this thing, because they're very much like, they don't like you. They don't like the way that your attitude that you're coming in with and your spirit that you're bringing in and just the way you're acting. There's no point, there's no use for you in that, in their space.
And they don't even pretend to like you.
And they don't even pretend, because the Jamaicans are really honest people.
Which is what one thing Emerson also says. He says, don't pretend to like people. Don't, you know, because then he talks about the fact that when you pretend to be something or you fit yourself into this mold, you then take on the uniform of that particular idea. So, and he speaks about the fact that your face kind of changes into this fake smile because you pretend to like the company you're around. Yeah. So Jamaicans don't do that then. If they don't like it, if their spirit don't take her, then that's it. They're not gonna.
You know what? I feel like Jamaicans are a complex people because they won't like you on one hand, but they'll turn up at your funeral and talk about how they loved you all that time or whatever. Do you see what I mean? And they come with their food. They'd be like, "Yeah, man, like back in the day," but they just
come for a good time, isn't it?
You know what I'm saying? They're here for a good time, not a long time. But at the end of the day, I do think that it's contextual. A lot of these things are contextual, right? Mm. Like if you have stages where grannies will be like, they won't say anything. They will kind of like be in your face and be smiling. But until you break up with your partner, they'll be like, "Oh, my spirit didn't take her anyway," or "I didn't take like this person for this one and the other.
Mm.
And then all of a sudden it's this revelation that comes now. That's like, "Well, why didn't you say this before?"
Yeah.
"Oh, because me did." You know what I mean? Like, because you know what I mean? Like, you get that. And I'm sure that that's the same in like a lot of like, definitely other Caribbean nations, but a lot of West African like families and nations.
Because my mom does that all the time. "Oh, my spirit doesn't." Yeah.
Yeah, like they will just say that they don't like them. But then again, a lot of it, again, you know, you being the son or whatever, they might not like anybody that you bring home. Mm. Or, you know, my grandma doesn't like you for a long time. Not necessarily doesn't like you, but she's indifferent until you're serious. And then it's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
This is the situation.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know. It's a good way to kind of protect yourself, I guess. It's a self-preservation tool.
And you're being true to yourself.
Yeah, you're being true.
True to, like, you must be in harmony with yourself
I don't know them. Mm. So I don't really know whether I like them or not.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, they're just somebody who's there kind of thing.
And what about intuition with other things then? So for example, if you think, "No, this is a bad idea," do you take on that? Do you accept that? Or do you say, "Wait, let me think this through and then make a decision"? Or do you trust that first instinct? You personally.
I'm trying to think of a situation where that's happened, but if it feels good, I know that I feel good with the person, then I'll just go with it. Because, you know, life is short. Like, we will, like, I'm very big on, like, moments and very big on, like, having experiences with people where they're like, at one point it might be a really great experience, like everything, like this feels great, like spiritually, everything's moving the way it should. But then the next day it might not.
Mm.
And that's when you just kind of just got to listen to it and be like, "This is not where I'm at the minute," kind of thing. Nothing. And I guess it kind of feeds back to this continuity. The idea of nothing will be the same the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you see what I mean? Like, just nothing. Like, you could go out and you could meet somebody that was great. It was having you're having an amazing day and you're having an amazing time. You like, I don't know, done La La Land, danced in the moonlight, whatever.
Mm-mm.
Next day, you might just not want to do that.
Yeah.
You might literally want to sit in your house. But it's not every day that you're going to be doing all of these things. Do you see what I mean? So, you know.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
I
Can you apply it to...
Yeah, I'm very much like... I like to think things through. And obviously after reading this, I always then try and act on intuition, what I feel instantly. So I really have to, you know, he does say, watch for that gleam of light inside you. It's not, I don't think it's something that you're born knowing how to do. It takes time. You have to get to know yourself and know how you feel about certain things and recognize feelings and thoughts and so on and so forth.
Yeah. You're constantly learning yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think I'm trying to do it more. Trying not to, I think it will help me with my overthinking, you know.
Yeah, you overthink.
Yeah, definitely overthink. But yeah, that's that.
I don't know. What do you think about then? Because he speaks about, you know, everything that you have, you already need.
Mm.
And everything that is there in life for you at this moment in time will be there to make you happy. What do you think about that in relation to, say, you know, I'm reading minimalism, I'm reading about minimalism in Goodbye Things. But what do you think about that kind of like that concept? Because a lot of people don't, a lot of people acquire things because they think that it's going to make them happier. But I feel like what I've actually noticed is that when I buy things, they are always for a particular use. I don't buy things because, oh, I'm going to feel good because I've got this ring or whatever.
Yeah.
Everything is a particular use. I've got my watch because I wanted to track my fitness. You know, I've got my, I've got these trainers because I wanted to, I needed a pair of trainers to wear. Do you see what I mean? Like, it's not, oh, I liked those trainers, I want to get those trainers. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
If I buy new clothes, I'm buying it because I'm going on holiday. Like, I it's a really weird minimalist mindset that I'm kind of going through. It's strange
that, actually, because I can agree with that, that I usually buy anything, if I buy something, it's because I need it, except for perfume. I buy perfume because I just like it, and I guess because I want to smell good. But then sometimes I buy perfume, I literally wear it once and then I won't wear it again, and I buy it because it makes me feel good. I mean, shit, I'm going to buy perfume today. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to buy some Tom Ford. But then again, I don't know. I think we all have our vices, don't we? We all buy things that we don't. Actually, the majority of people buy things they don't need. So yeah, I don't know.
It's a shame Ray's not here because, like, she's big on
what,
gift reception,
yeah,
and gifting herself things.
Yeah,
because I feel like that's a really interesting concept.
I don't like that. I don't like the idea of gifting yourself things.
I don't like that.
It makes it sound as if to say you only give yourself something when you feel you deserve it. You always deserve something.
Do you?
Why don't you?
I can walk into a shop and I could be in there for an hour.
Yeah.
Say, and not feel like I deserve the things that are in there.
That's a sickness.
Wow.
Let me tell you something. Let me be real with you. How can you go into a shop, think about buying something, and say to yourself, no, I don't deserve this? What kind of self-hate is that?
I know, it's mad, isn't it?
Alex, no, come on.
It's crazy, right?
You're coming with me. We're going to buy perfume today. You deserve it. I'm telling you,
okay.
We're going to buy perfume.
Because the thing is, like, it's one of them things, like, looking at what you have and the things that are around you, because I don't necessarily seek value in the stuff that is around me. It's I literally use them because they are there to be used. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, I got
my
that.
Face mask because I need my face to look a certain way.
I hope
way.
You don't apply that thinking to people, to human beings, because then we'll be having a problem.
Because you're useful.
Yeah,
no,
that's
no,
the
definitely
way to
not. You know, but I don't see human. Obviously, people are material.
Yeah.
But I don't see them as materials, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I get
it. At the end of the day, if I had nothing and my friends had nothing, there's no reason why we wouldn't be friends.
Yeah.
I'm not friends because of what people have.
Yeah.
I'm friends because of the way people are.
Who they
and
are,
how they treat each other and how, you know what I mean, and a relationship. There's no reason. Why would you be a friend of somebody who has... Like, there's people that have those shallow relationships. They don't tend to last.
Which is a lot of people.
They do have a lot of people.
You know, a lot of relationships these days, especially for our generation, are transactional as well. It's like, I mean, you know when people say, what are you bringing to the table? What are you adding to my life? Yeah. So because they're not adding anything to your life, you don't want to be their friend anymore?
Yeah.
I think that's rotten, bruv. If anyone says to me, what are you bringing to the table? I'll be like, I don't want to talk to you, mate. I don't want to be your friend.
Yeah. I see what you're saying, but look at it from this point of view. It's a thing where the transaction doesn't have to be negative. The transaction could be positive. Because when you're saying, what are you bringing to the table? It doesn't have to be money. It doesn't have to be of that kind of value. But are you enriching me? Am I enriching you?
But Alex, this is...
Are we helping each other to grow?
This is cultural capitalism. This is how it's really seeped into the mentality, the mind states of people. Like, you're actually thinking about human relationships in a transactional way. That's a sickness, bro.
But the thing is, what you do that innately anyway. You do that inherently because you're going to be around people.
Yeah, but you're not consciously thinking about it. Of course, communities are built on helping each other, doing things for each other, but it's not like you consciously sit there and think, what can this person do for me? What has this person ever done for me?
I think it's the phrasing, because I feel like you can say, oh, that's a good person, that person has done this, that and the other. I know that
how about
I know I can trust A with that.
How about,
I can't trust B with that because B yeah, will do fair. This and the other but B will I know that B will react with this for this thing. Yeah. B is good because B is more direct with what he needs to get and whatnot.
Mm.
So when I think of bringing stuff to the table, I think of it like, you know, everybody has qualities, everybody has values, everybody has those things that they can bring to relationships and partnerships.
But all that is noticing differences in people and differences in the relationships.
That's what I'm saying, it's wording rather than...
Well, no, but when majority of people say, what are you bringing to the table? That's not what they mean.
I've never been approached by anybody. Okay. I would call friends to say, what are you bringing to the table?
Yeah.
But what I have had an issue with friends is vulnerability.
Mm.
Now, if I cannot be vulnerable, you don't have to be vulnerable with everybody. But I do feel like you have to have a level of vulnerability with me, for example, to call certain people friends. I have to have a level of vulnerability.
But that's more about feeling comfortable with someone, isn't it? And feeling like
that's the only way that I could probably consider like friendship.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair, though. I mean, I get that.
That's it. Like, what are you bringing to the table? Are you allowing me to be vulnerable with you? Or is that what you're doing? If you're not doing that, that's fine. I know where I stand in this kind of like relationship. I know that I won't go to X person because of this.
Okay, fair.
You know what I'm saying? So I feel like it's a wording thing, and I feel like people get so caught up in the semantics of it all. But like, just go on, like you go on your feeling. Like if you feel that like this person is a good person to be around that person.
Trust thyself.
Like, trust your intuition.
Fair enough.
Think about that intuition, B.
Cool. Anyway, so that's been Self-Reliance by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Trust me, read the essay. It's amazing. And you will always sound literary if you say to someone, have you read Ralph Waldo Emerson? Like, they'll always be like, wow, you've read Emerson. Like, trust me, I do it all the time. I'm always like, yeah, Emerson, that's my favourite author, when realistically I've only read one of his essays. moving on to mostly flicks.
All right.
What we got, Alex?
Derek made me watch this film. It's Twilight.
You described Twilight as this film.
New Moon.
Amazing movie.
It's not an amazing movie at all.
I love it.
Thing is, right.
So what did you think? What do you think?
All right, so this movie, let's run it down. Let's break it down now. It's about this pale white girl called Bella, who's in love with even a paler white man called Edward.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs off into the forest and then she kind of like, you know, falls for the Native American brother out here in the woods, fixing bikes and shit. Basically having a crisis of confidence with who she loves and why she loves them, all these different things. Everybody is trying to save this white girl. You know, she's discovered that there's werewolves in this mix now. She's discovered that the vampires ain't shit.
They're not werewolves, they're wolves.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I wondered that, actually, because I was thinking to myself, why are you changing into a wolf but there's no full moon?
Yeah, they're not werewolves.
What is that?
They're just part of... I think there's actually a real...
A tribe.
Tribe in...
Native American culture.
America that believe that some of... Or I think some of their totems are like wolves and stuff.
I think it's trash just because of the way that I don't like those stories being told by people that aren't of those cultures. And I don't, and I'm really, really, I have no idea whether who wrote the book again.
Who wrote Twilight? Stephanie Meyer.
I don't
like
know.
That.
I have no idea whether Stephanie Meyer went out and did her research on Native American culture and totems and all these different things. I have no idea whether she did this, so I'm not going to sit here and judge her on it.
Yeah.
But I just get really skeptical when it comes to speaking about Native American culture, because I feel like
she didn't really go into detail with the culture, though, did she?
No, but the thing is, but the fact that the wolves are Native American in itself, and then the vampires are European in itself, is like, it's telling.
Yeah, and the vampires are the invaders, and they get chased out of any time they come near the Native Americans' land. They get chased off of it. That's fair enough, mate.
But yeah, Bella's still there with her European self.
But Bella's not a vampire.
Yet. Yeah. Anyway, so that's basically the film. The film is based off the book Twilight. And I don't know. I felt like...
You didn't enjoy any of it.
I felt like I was watching it. Me and my cousins were watching it yesterday. And I was looking at the screen and I was just like, this is like... Some of my cousins love it. And they said that you need to watch one through to three. Is it three films or four?
Four.
Did the last one in two
parts? No, there's five.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Breaking Dawn Part 1, Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Wait, so there's Twilight.
There's Twilight. There's New Moon, Eclipse, Breaking Dawn Part 1, Breaking Eclipse Dawn Part 2.
Yeah, okay. So they said that you have to watch those all to kind of like get the idea of everything and growth and whatnot and
Eclipse
blah, blah, blah.
Is shit. Breaking Dawn Part 1 is shit. And then they even
said at the time of when it was released, we have to... it was big at the time.
It was, yeah.
And it was big at the time. I remember being working in Waterstones and trying to... Is that 2000? Wasn't it like 2006, 7, 8?
Don't know.
Maybe.
Charlie boy, what did you think of the film, man?
I think the film, I was trying to give context for the people then, innit? The film was, it raised a lot of questions, but I don't think it was well written. I don't think they were good actors at all. But yeah, I think they're really, there were good themes that brought up, you know. Forbidden Loves.
It's a guilty pleasure for me. I absolutely loved this movie. One, because I think Jacob is really, really sexy.
Really?
He's really nice. But he looked like a man. But I knew.
He was, in the movie, he was 16, quote unquote.
Okay, I don't think he was.
Oh my God, Jacob, you become really buff. Oh my God, Jacob. Yeah. Oh my God, where'd you get those pecs from? Oh my God, Jacob, you got mono? I'm like, what the fuck, yeah? Like, all of a sudden, a guy comes back, he's standing in the rain, bare chest. I can't be around you anymore. I just feel like it was all so...
What?
Contrived. Everything was contrived about it.
I mean,
everything.
Yeah,
everything
but just
said was
enjoy
like,
the damn movie, man.
I mean, I tried.
I really like. Obviously, I'm Team Jacob. Never been Team Edward.
Yeah, that whole family. Nah, man.
Part of shiny face Twitter. I weren't feeling Edward at all. Like
shiny face Twitter.
He's.
Are you gonna call him?
He's an abusive guy, fam.
Edward.
Yeah, Edward Cullen.
That was kind of emotional abuse, wasn't it? Like, I'm going. Oh, where are you going? Who's we? Me and my family.
No, but obviously he did that to save her, though, didn't he? Because,
I mean,
fam, his brother just literally tried to chop her, fam. Like, tried to suck her blood. Like, of course.
I'm sorry.
He has to
You are a human around vampires. Do not cut yourself. Because they have a tendency to want to drink and eat you.
But she never experienced that before. And I think that it was a wake-up call for Edward. When he saw that, he probably thought...
But they were also calm. They were like, oh...
Yeah,
he's jumping around and trying to eat my girlfriend.
Yeah, because they were trying to control themselves because they wanted to, obviously, they wanted to yammer as well.
They should just turn her, fam.
They eventually do. But I really, really like the movie, man. I think it's just...
So what are the best themes from the movie that you probably could actually...
I like the way they turn into werewolves. Turn into wolves.
So they get angry.
They don't even have to be angry. They can literally just turn it.
It's based off emotion. Because when she slapped one of the guys in the group,
yeah,
he was angry, so he changed. Jacob went to save her, so he was. I think that was fear, or there was some kind of like, you know, when you try and protect somebody, there's that kind of adrenaline, so he had to run and actively change. I don't think he would change if he was happy, in a sense. Do you see what I mean?
No, I think they can control it. I can't remember. No, I'm pretty sure they can control it. I mean, later movies anyway. But yeah, I really like Jacob and I like the family, the unit, the wolves. I like their family
unit.
I like that.
I have been watching.
I didn't like Bella, the way she treated Jacob. It was horrible.
You know what? I never liked the main girl in those films, in those shows, and I'll explain why. Because I'm watching Vampire Diaries at the same time, and the storylines are similar, a bit more modern, better acting, and whatnot. But I'm thinking, like, everybody's going out to save this girl.
Yeah.
When this girl is the main cause of all the problem. Like, literally, this main character, this person, is the issue at every single step of the way. The problem. Oh, why is this person coming to try and invade this, trying to invade our lives? It's because of this girl. Why did such and such have to go away? Because of this girl. Why is this person having to defy their nature? Because of this girl. Why is our tribe being under threat? Because of this girl.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Like, and that's kind of what I always think that, why does she never die? Why does this girl never die? Or why do they never make her into a vampire? I don't know. They probably do that in Twilight, don't they, or something?
Breaking Dawn Part 1.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, they probably do that. But I think that when we're looking at these things, they always position the girl, or the typically a white girl, as the savior of all these things and the cause of all these problems, and oh my gosh, that she must be saved at all times. And it has made me think about wanting to see a black supernatural show, like, not outside of heroes, outside of superheroes, outside of all of that. And then not secondary characters. I want to see like a main body of cast as a black, like, supernatural show.
Wasn't there one that was supposed to come on Netflix? I remember seeing a trailer of this little boy, black boy, who had superpowers and he lived in the hood. He had telekinesis.
That was on Netflix. Was that on YouTube?
I saw it on YouTube. Apparently it was coming on Netflix.
And he had telekinesis kind of thing. Yeah. And his mum was protecting him.
Yes, but that was like 2 years ago.
But I feel like whenever I see those programs, because they're not well produced, they're never as produced as, say, do you see what I mean? Like, I'm watching, there's a show on Netflix called Superstition. And it's like a black family. The mum's, I would say she's a witch. The dad is thousands of years old, and they work in an undertaker's, and obviously he's had several families along his lifetime, and he's immortal. He got given like his immortality when he was in the moors, kind of thing. And I was looking at it and I'm thinking, it's great, it's good for sci-fi and stuff, but the way that it's kind of set up, I feel like it could be, you know, when you feel like it could just be produced a lot better and made into a proper series and stuff. Like, it's good, I mean, to a point. You know, I mean, but I feel like I don't think they put enough energy into it. Because when I look at that and I compare that to Vampire Diaries, and I look at the way that the storylines produce, the characters, the character development, all these different things, and like the trajectory of their stories, I think there's more time and money put into it.
I don't even think it's always about money. Like, my favorite superhero movie is a movie called Chronicle, which I think didn't have much budget at all. It's about some young boys. Michael B. Jordan's in it, actually. They find like some crystal thing underground and it starts glowing. Their nose start bleeding and they wake up and they suddenly have telekinesis. They can fly. They can summon each other in this weird way. They don't really explain it. It's
Chronicle.
Chronicle is fucking sick, bro. Yeah, like,
but is it finished?
It's a movie.
Oh, it's a movie.
Yeah, okay. It's a movie. It's so sick. And I think that if they've really, because that's what that movie from, that was supposed to be on Netflix or series, it kind of reminded me of Chronicle, the way they did it, because it was just like normal everyday life, but then, oh, let's just throw a bit of telekinesis in there, and it looked really, really good. So I don't always think the budget's the thing. I think it's just about making it
a good movie or
yeah,
a good
unbelievable.
Show.
Yeah, exactly. But
the thing is, right, we had they're bringing out a new Charmed. So you didn't watch Charmed, did you?
Nah.
So
I wasn't allowed.
He wasn't allowed, I think. Yeah, Charmed was like 99, wasn't it? Up until 2008. But they're rebooting it for this year, so it's coming to come out in August or September, I think, maybe October, around those months. And they've got like people, they've got a black girl in it, see, a mixed race girl, who's ironically British, and she's in it. And then they've got Latina sisters. So they're three sisters now, but they're just like the most ethnically diverse. So they are white, but they're Latina, all this stuff. And I'm just like, that's great and all. Aside from them actually including the old cast and doing all those things, there needs to be a black like supernatural thing where there's a black family who have been through whatever through history, because there's so much there. In Vampire Diaries, there's this girl called Bonnie, and she's like one of the witches from Salem, and like I feel like there's a lot to talk about with regards to, you know, being a black witch in America via slavery, via all that stuff and all those kind of things. I feel like there's so much to kind of like discuss there, and I feel like that would actually help the storyline. I feel like,
do you know what they need to do, like, just before we close this section?
Yeah,
the first thing that I think they really need to do is make a movie about a Haitian family who practice voodoo. See? And the father is a guy called Dutty Bookman.
See?
And
the head of the, like, the, yeah, the head
exactly,
of the family,
yeah. And they don't, like, they're just basically trying to live the same way the Cullens are trying to live in Twilight. They're just trying to fit in with white society, but they have all of these powers. One. Also, they should try and do it with the Orishas, where there's like a family that are descended, like you know how Black Lightning had a family and they got powers and stuff like that, but that's just very poorly done, I personally think.
Yeah.
They should do it like that with the Orishas, where, you know, the father is Oluran and blah, blah, blah. And
that's kind of what Tommy Adeyemi did in Children of Blood and Bone.
But without the fantasy element.
Yeah, without the fantasy element. Yeah. But like, it's very much like they grew from that. Like, the, you know, yeah, man, someone, if you're going to find the story, come on now. Like, you got the founding families, you got the gods, and then you're going to like
listen,
have all
the
powers.
Listen, we give you the ideas.
The idea. Come on, I want to see it. I want to see it happen. True. Just because, like, I'm tired of having to watch black people just be subsidiary characters and, you know, just secondary characters always helping. I don't know, like, it's not always a race thing, but I just kind of want to just see like a minority just kind of like take the fore kind of thing.
Well, yeah.
And I think they do spin-offs for Vampire Diaries and whatnot, but it'd be sick if there's a spin-off for like the witches, because in Vampire Diaries, the witches are black. Like, the black guys, warlocks and whatnot, they are black in this series. But I just feel like there needs to be more time and more, you know, money put into those things.
Yeah, I hear you.
I need to see those books as well.
Yeah.
To relate that back to the show.
Cool. Anyway, so that's been mostly things just rambling on. So that's us done today.
But yeah.
Thank you for listening, guys.
Can't you ask...
Yeah.
Would you be a vampire or a werewolf?
Werewolf. Easy. Wolf. Easy.
Really?
Easy.
I don't know.
I'm not going to hell.
But no, vampires don't.
They're damned.
They're damned forever, but they live forever.
But if they die, where are they going? They're going to hell.
Maybe.
They're going to hell, Alex.
Who knows? Does hell exist?
Don't forget, you can find us on Twitter at Mostly Lit, Instagram at Mostly Lit Pod. Our website is what, Alex?
Oh, mostly-lit.com.
And email address?
mostlylit@gmail.com.
Awesome.
Yeah. Catch us each Monday. Rate, review, and subscribe.
Yes, please rate,
follow
review,
back,
and subscribe.
Comment, do what you gotta do. Loads of exciting stuff coming up this year. Holla.
All right. Cheers, guys. Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.